June 14th, year is 2001. This is an interview with Morris Mo Savransky, Savransky, pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds, 1954. We are at his apartment in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'll never forget this year, 1949, Charleston.
That was a good year?
The worst year I've
ever had. Was the worst year.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was going real good. I pitched a ball game up in Flint, Michigan, 28 degrees.
Ooh.
Sickening. And I stayed in there and got the whole ball game, and it was awful. It was terrible. I came out of that with a dead arm.
Oh.
Pitched the rest of the year with a dead arm.
Oh.
And I, at 10 and 18, I ain't never lost like that in my life in any record. But
what class was that in the minor?
That was A-ball.
A-ball.
Yeah. And the funniest part, I had a great spring that year, and Cincinnati wanted to keep me, really, in 49. And Pat Patterson, who was the head scout, he wanted me to get more. At those days, they said, send him out. He's got three options. Let him get some experience.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it was. And look at that. See, they don't even put in here ERA. Oh, they do have it, yeah. ERA, I led the league at Columbia.
Yeah, next year. What class was that?
A-ball.
A-ball.
Yeah, I came from Tulsa there, and I hadn't pitched in 6 weeks. Went right at G. Walker was my manager. He says, you're in there today, the short game of the doubleheader. I didn't even have my stuff. It didn't even come off the train with me.
Uh-huh.
I came from Tulsa. I had to go. There was a strike. I had to go from Tulsa to Washington, from Washington down to Columbia.
Oh, what a
Couldn't
trip.
It was a horrible trip. And I pitched a short game that day, and I win the game. And after G. Walker and I got along great. He wanted to bring me up. I had a four-game stretch there where I had, right around 4th of July, it was the 4th of July, right in that area there. I had come from them in June, and I won 15 games for them the rest of the year.
Uh-huh.
And I had a four-hit shutout, two-hit shutout, a no-hitter shutout, and a one-hit shutout consecutively, and they wanted to bring me up. And then Pat Patterson, let him finish the year. Same thing they did in those days. They didn't bring anybody up.
No.
The end of the year, you came up, and that was it.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did, but I don't think this is correct.
What's wrong?
I don't know where they got this here. Charleston, the American Association. We had a horrible team. In fact, that was my last season I played. Well, I actually went to spring training in 56. I had another operation, and I got married, and I went to spring training. I won a game in spring training, but my arm was raw. I had the operation in January, and I went to spring training in February, and it was raw.
Yeah.
But my arm came around, and I went on voluntary retired. They wanted to put my contract down to Nashville in the Southern League, and I said, no, I'm going to, I had business back in Cleveland, and I was in petroleum business, and I said, no, I'm going back home. And I went back, and then I started throwing batting practice for the Indians. I mean, I used to come down there and throw batting practice.
Uh-huh.
My arm came around. Mel Harder says to me, Mo, you're crazy. You should go back. You got good stuff. That's when the Indians had Bobby Avila, and they had Al Rosen, and they had a good ball club.
Mm-hmm.
50, what was that, 56.
Uh-huh.
And They couldn't hit me in batting practice. I'm just throwing a ball. My ball was live. My arm came back real good. But I was in business. I was married already. I said, no, I'm not going back. Uh-huh. But I could have gone back probably. I was still young.
Yeah.
I was still in my 20s. So, 56.
What type of operation did they do on your elbow?
Had bone chips removed.
Oh, okay.
In those days, well, the first operation I should have never, ever had. I had it in the Army. Went in the Army in 1951 after the Buffalo season.
They got you in the Navy, but that's...
No, in the Army.
Army.
I was in the Army. Oh, okay. They let me in the Navy?
Yeah. I'll have to write him a letter, tell him to change it.
I was in the Army. I was over in Hawaii most of the time. Uh-huh. I took my basic training there at Schofield Barracks, Hawaiian Infantry Training Center. And I played at Fort Shafter, I stayed there. On my team, we had Don Larson. We had, before Don came to the big leagues.
Uh-huh. I just talked to Don on Saturday.
He was here. I wanted to see him. I saw him down in San Diego about... when did they have the All-Star game there? About 4 years ago?
But yeah.
I saw him down there. He got thin.
Yeah.
Boy, he's real thin. I got heavy. I was thin. But Don was a pretty heavy drinker.
Yeah.
Pretty good drinker. But he looked good. He's doing all right. I guess he still lives in the San Diego area or somewhere.
Well, I think he's up in Idaho now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Moved up there a couple years ago.
Did he get married?
Yes, I believe he did.
I know he was married, and I don't know, he's had a funny life. But Don's a nice guy. And Frankie Malzone played on that team, too. Frank played for Boston.
Uh-huh.
Well, he played shortstop. In fact, Frank and I both broke Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio's record when they were in the service in the Pacific in the Second World War. We broke the RBI record of both of them.
Uh-huh.
We were both on the same team, Frank and I, and Frank beat me out the last game of the season. So we had, I forget how many RBIs, I probably got it in the record somewhere. Uh-huh. My kids have most of my stuff now.
Yeah.
I've given them most of my memorabilia and stuff. And I played in the service with a good friend of mine that... He was in California. I don't know. I think he's still there. Don Ferresi, left-handed pitcher. He pitched for the Indians for a while. Ferresi.
Right.
And Bob Kelly played with me. Bob Kelly was with the Cubs, and he's from Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
His wife was a primary witness in the Sam Shepard murder.
Oh.
Yeah. We were playing winter ball in Puerto Rico when that came about.
Uh-huh.
It was in 1953, I believe. Sam Shepard went to the same high school I did, Cleveland Heights.
Oh, did he really? Oh, I didn't realize
that. Sam was a great athlete.
Was he?
And his kid really worked on it. I'm convinced Sam did not kill her.
I don't think he killed her.
And this kid has really worked his whole life trying to prove his father's innocence. I don't know if you saw that program on TV. They had a program on it. But Sam Shepard was a good athlete, and he was the athlete of the year, and they had pictures in the hallway there. They had a hallway down to the gym, and I didn't think Cleveland Heights did right. They took his picture out of there, and I don't think it was right. I went back for my 50th reunion four years ago, I guess,
uh-huh.
And... they fixed the school up. You know, it's primarily black now, but it's really, they've kept it up. It's a nice school.
Mm-hmm.
They were very nice to us. It was a really nice reunion. And got to see all of that. They still had our state championship baseball team up there. That's the only state championship they ever won in baseball. 1947, we won it. And
did you pitch on that team?
Yeah.
Did you play any other position?
I played first base. I played the outfield.
Uh-huh.
I was a pretty good hitter.
Uh-huh.
And we had a good team. I think we lost one game. We were 22-1 or something like that. We won the state championship. I had 10-0. I never lost a game that year.
Mm-hmm.
my senior year. And we only lost one game, and that was Shaker. Shaker Heights.
Oh.
We lost, and that was a competitor of ours.
You're right, yeah.
We lost a game at Jebby Weidrich. He pitched. He was a nice pitcher. He played with me in the Army, too.
Uh-huh.
Jeb, he was a little right-hander. And he lost 3-2 to Shaker. That was the only game we've lost.
Did anybody else on that team make the minor or major league?
There are a lot of them played minor league. Jerry Rendlesham, he's passed away. Ray Lindquist, he played in the minors. He played, he got as far as double A ball, I think. Ray was a good ball player. And I'm trying to think who else went out. I don't know if any others went out.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things I did. I played in that Brooklyn Against the World All-Star game that great first baseman in the Hall of Fame. He had a son that played, too, in the big leagues.
Sisler,
George Sisler,
yeah.
Is the one that came. They were picking people from all over the country for this All-Star team that would be the world team. That played the best of the Brooklyn, of New York, all the boroughs.
Oh, okay.
They had, and it was called Brooklyn Against the World, and it was sponsored by the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Brooklyn Eagle, which was a newspaper in Brooklyn. And Ranch Rickey was the general manager then. And my manager was, in that game was Pepper Martin.
Oh.
And they had people like Dazzy Vance there, Fresco Thompson. I don't know if you're probably like me, an American League fan. You're not familiar with the National League. When I signed with Cincinnati, I didn't know one ball player in the whole National League. I didn't follow the National League. And of course, I was brought up in Cleveland. I followed the Indians. I go back to remembering Hal Trosky played first base, had the migraines.
Right.
I mean, I could tell you about Cleveland baseball. I was pretty familiar with it. I grew up in that area, and that's what I knew.
When you were a kid, when did you discover baseball?
I played Class F, which was it was just below Legion ball. It was for younger kids. We didn't have little. They did have Little League, but I lived in the city. I lived on the east side off of Kinsman, 149th and Kinsman, which is all black now, but
right.
It was white then. And then I moved to Cleveland Heights. We moved to Cleveland Heights when I was in the. I started the eighth grade there at Roosevelt Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
And I played American Legion ball. This Ray Lindquist, his father played for the St. Louis Browns back in the 20s. He was good friends with, what's those brothers, the DeWitt brothers that owned the St. Louis Browns. And he played back in those days, back in the 20s, for the St. Louis Browns, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he got me, he was our coach. He taught me everything. He knew baseball. He was a big, tall left-hander, too, just like me. And
uh-huh.
He had two sons, Bill Link, Ray Link was the one that I played with, and the older son was Bill Link was too. He was a Bill. And he was in the front office of San Antonio when that was a Browns farm club in the Texas League.
Uh-huh.
And he taught us everything. Our coach in high school knew nothing, Bernice White, and he got all the credit for everything. But Bill Lindquist molded us. We played Legion ball together, all of us. And we lost in the state finals of the American Legion to Bentley Post out of Cincinnati, who I later played with all these fellas at Ohio State.
Uh-huh.
And They had some good ball players on there. They had some players that went to the big leagues. Don Zimmer was on that team. Zimmer and I talk about it when he comes to town. Zimmer and I see it. Zim's a good guy.
He's funny.
He's really a funny man, yeah. He's been around a long time in baseball.
He sure
He's
has.
He's got a plate in his head when he played with the Dodgers.
He got hit by.
Yeah. He was a good ball player, though. And they had some good ball players on their team. Fellas that came out of there, I know at Cincinnati, Herm Wehmeyer came out of that team, but at an earlier team, Herm was a little older. Herm Wehmeyer, he died young. Most of those ball players I played with, they're dead. They died young, a lot of them. I'm still friendly with Nuxall, and I are good friends yet. He still announces games. I saw him last year down in Atlanta, just beat a bout of cancer. He's doing okay. Yeah. Joe's a nice guy. Joe and I were good friends. And I'm bouncing around here a little bit, but it's nostalgia. Are you recording?
I'm recording.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Okay. But there were a lot of things in my career of amateur and in the pro ball when I came in and came up. In those days, baseball was a lot different. As far as I'm concerned, and everybody that played in that era says the same thing. I know Early Wynn, before he died, I talked to him. He's a great guy. You know, a very fierce competitor. And he was very angry at the kids today. I mean, they don't appreciate that what they have due to the ball players back then. They wouldn't have what they have today if it wasn't for what we pioneered. We knew back in those days that the reserve clause was not good for baseball. It was not good for the players, but it was good for baseball. Let's put it that way. I'm sorry, I was wrong. They should have never done that. They would have never had the problems they have today with these people making all this money and everything, where they had this free agency and everything. I really think, as much as we felt, they used to say we were slaves, we were bought, we were owned, and that was it. But truly, it was good for baseball. It was good for every sport. They've ruined every sport with that free agency. And we didn't make the money. They thought we were monkeys. We got paid in peanuts. But that's about it. But in those days, the owners were very tight with the money. They didn't do it. I don't know if you remember back far enough, you were from Cleveland, when before Vec and them bought the ball club, when the ball club was owned by Alva Bradley. Mm-hmm. He was a big real estate man in Cleveland, and Bradley was very, very tight. He didn't get come off the money at all. But that's how baseball was in those days. Of course, when I signed with Cincinnati 1948, what did I sign? 48, yeah. 40. I think 48, yeah. When I signed with them, Powell Crosley owned the ball club. Remember the Crosley automobile?
Uh-huh.
That was called Crosley. And he, of course, Crosley Field was the field in those days. And the general manager at that time was Warren Giles. And I went down there and I worked out, and they wanted to sign me. But I got everybody wanted to sign me from that World All-Star game that I was in, Brooklyn against the World. I pitched 7 innings in that game, and I gave up 2 hits, and it was in Brooklyn, in Ebbets Field.
Uh-huh.
The kid that pitched against me was Rocky Graziano's nephew, a fighter. A kid by the name of Barbella. That's what Graziano's real name is, uh-huh. Barbella. And they had some nice ball players on their team, and we beat them. It was a 2 out of 3 series, and Hal Leibowitz from the, at that time, the Cleveland News.
Right.
He accompanied me with there. Uh-huh. And there was a fella from Peninsula Steel, what was his name, that was in Class A ball. He he went with us to, I'm trying to think. But see, I was the second one from Cleveland to get picked for that. The year before, there was a fellow by the name of Milan Kubini, who was from the West Side. And he was a shortstop. He played in the first Brooklyn Against the World in 46, I guess.
So they played it for a couple of years in a row? And
yes. They had it, I don't know how many years, but it was a nice thing. It was a good thing for Brooklyn Dodgers. They got to go for these ball players, and it was a good promotional thing for amateur ball in New York. My catcher in that ball game was Gus Triandos.
Oh, okay. He was a pretty good catcher.
Gus and I were pretty good friends afterwards, and they called him the Greek, which he was. He was from, he came from the very rough district, poor area. He came from, I forget what that's called now, but he came from San Francisco. And of course, my friend Don Ferresi and Billy Martin, they came from Walnut something right outside of San Francisco. And so there's some good ball players came from that area.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they got better weather. They play all year around, so there's a lot to it. But that Brooklyn Against the World was a nice thing. They took us all over, and it was really nice. There weren't too many that played pro ball from that. Triandos and I, and I got a book somewhere. I gave all my things to my children, and I have all that memorabilia. Whoever knew memorabilia would be what it is today.
That's true.
I have a picture that I gave to my kids. They got somewhere. My first year in pro ball, a picture with Cy Young and me with his arm around me.
Wow.
If I would have got that thing signed.
Oh.
Unbelievable what it would be worth.
Yeah.
But I whoever knew that? I wasn't an autograph collector. I used to go to the Indians game. Kids would get you autograph. I never did that. The only time I ever got anything like that, 1954, when the All-Star game was in Cleveland, we had Cincinnati, we had two of our players on there. We had Gus Bell and Ted Kluszewski on that All-Star game. They both hit home runs in that game, incidentally.
Uh-huh.
And I think Al Rosen hit two in that game.
Yes, he did.
And in any event, that I got a ball with some of the National League, some of the American League. I still had that ball. I gave it to my children.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't a collector of those things. I mean, I just wasn't one of those kids like that. But I loved baseball, and I loved every part of it. And I liked sports in general. I was a good athlete.
Uh-huh.
And I played basketball and baseball. In fact, I went to Ohio State. I played basketball there, too. I played with Neil Johnson, who's in the Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
He was from the NBA. I don't know if you remember him.
The name doesn't sound familiar.
He played pro baseball, too. He was a pitcher. He was signed up in the Phillies organization. He was 6'10", something like that. But he died young.
Uh-huh.
And he was a good basketball player. In those days, I was 5'11", weighed 150 pounds, and I played basketball, but I could dunk. They say white man can't jump.
Uh-huh.
We could jump, but it was a wonderful thing. I mean, I went up. My dad was in business, and he was in the petroleum business, and he did well. We had a lot of gas stations, and he says, you put that time into my business, you'll make more money than you will in baseball. And he wasn't kidding in those days.
Yeah.
But he says, you love it, you do it, because you would resent it the rest of your life if I didn't let you go play. And he was right. He was 100%. I played until I went back and went into the business and did well in it. And he was from the old school. He came from Europe. He was very well coordinated. He would have been an athlete if he'd have been in this country. He played polo and regular polo on a horse. He came from Russia. Both my parents did.
Uh-huh.
And as coordinated as he was, and he was on the husky side, my mom was on a slim side. She wasn't near quarters. He could dance real good. She had two left feet, but she was beautiful and terrific. They were terrific parents. I had a very good upbringing. I was the youngest of six children.
Oh, okay.
The one child I didn't know. He died as an infant before any of us were born.
Uh-huh.
And my brother was a very prominent lawyer in Cleveland. I don't know if you were probably living in Cleveland, 1975.
Oh, yeah.
My brother was murdered. He was an attorney. They were downtown. He was with a judge and the judge's secretary and my sister-in-law.
I remember reading about that.
And they got murdered. They got held up by three young black kids that were teenagers, 16 years old. And they gave them what they wanted, and one pulled out a sawed-off shotgun and said, "You white so-and-so," and shot him. It was terrible. Left a wife and five kids. And he was the closest one to me. He was 4 years older than me. And I still have the Clevelander magazine that had a big four-page article on it, how the system killed Gilbert Sobranski. Uh-huh. He was in the law firm with Danny McCarthy, who's a big lawyer in Cleveland. Dan McCarthy was the one when Steinbrenner was one of their clients in their law firm. And Steinbrenner, when he got into trouble with the American League, the commissioner's office, Dan McCarthy was the president in that interim when that came about the Indians. Uh-huh. I mean, for the Yankees. In fact, my brother, they owned a little percentage of the Yankees. They owned a small percentage of their law firm.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, my brother, he got killed, and it was terrible. I was living in Chicago at the time, and it was just awful. Terrible, terrible thing. But my brother was a wonderful guy. Very charitable, very good, very nice. They had a good law firm. They were down in the, first they were in the engineer building, and then they were in the 55 Public Square, what's that, the illuminated building. We were in the standard building, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were there. Yeah, my office was in the standard building, too. But that goes back a long way. But,
Did any of your brothers play baseball?
No, my brother, they weren't athletes. None of them were athletes. I was the first one. I played ball all the time since I was a kid. And I remember I'd never played basketball. I went out to the schoolyard there and they were playing. I said, "Come on, play." I didn't never play. And I played, and I went to Alexander Hamilton Junior High before I moved to Cleveland Heights, and I played basketball over there. From there, of course, most of the kids went to John Adams High School. And then when I moved, of course, I went to Cleveland Heights, and it was a different system, a little more wealthier area.
You're right. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, where I grew up, kids, we had some good athletes in there, good athletes, and we were poor kids, and we were in a poor area. So when we played Class F, most of that was CBF, it was called, Cleveland Baseball. I don't remember if you remember a fellow by the name of Duggan. He was the head of the CBF program, and they had a nice program for kids. But in Cleveland Heights, when I later on grew up over there, I didn't grow up when these kids were. They had a program. They had a little league, actual little league. That was probably the first one. Mrs. Morehart, it was Al Morehart. He played football and baseball at Cleveland Heights. It was his mother. She was a widow, I believe. And they had this little league field, The Indians she had naturally were her team.
Uh-huh.
And all the best ball players all played on this little league team. I played in a league there that was like Class F. It was similar when I first moved there. And I played for a team called Amalgamated Steel. And some of the kids that played on that team were very successful in business. Al Hartsmark and Lee Hartsmark, they were in the stock exchange. The Hartsmarks were big people in Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
And they all played in that league with them. We went from there to American Legion, and that's when Mr. Lindquist got us, and we went all the way to the state finals. Kid that pitched with me on that team was Scott York. He played basketball at Cleveland Heights, and he played for Duke University. He was a pretty good player. Scott was a good pitcher. We came to the state final. We lost a game earlier. I don't remember who lost it, but we lost a game, and we came from the loser's bracket down to the finals against Bentley Post. We had to beat them twice. It was double elimination. I pitched the first game against their ace, kid by the name of Andres, who went to the, he signed with Detroit and he hurt his arm. And I beat them in the first game. I think I shut him out 2-0. And Scott was supposed to pitch the second game, and he says his arm hurt him, so I pitch a doubleheader.
Ooh.
I pitch a second game, and I had him beat, and a guy hit a home run off me and beat me 3-2
Whoa.
In the final. It was a kid by the name of Butch Kaufman, who later I knew he went to Ohio State with me.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize it at the time who the kid that pitched against me in the second game was, and it was someone that pitched for the Cubs later. It was my wife's neighbor. She'll know, remember his name. Rita.
Yeah.
What was your neighbor across the street? What was his name? Brosnan. Jim Brosnan.
Brosnan. I remember that.
Okay.
Name.
Jim Brosnan, he pitched the second game against me. So they had a good team.
Uh-huh.
And the Fry kid that was the general manager and the manager of the Cubs, Jim Fry, I think that was his name. He was on that ball club. Jim Fry played big league ball.
Uh-huh.
They had a lot of good ball players on that team. But anyways, it's funny that my wife's neighbor across the street was Jim Brosnan.
Yeah.
Later on, we knew this after our discussions. But in any event, we lost that game. We came in second in the state that year. And it was nice. Then that was, from there we went into Class A. We were the youngest team ever to play in Class A. After we won the state championship, our team played in Class A, Deutsch Jewelers.
That whole team?
Yeah, that whole team. Well, in that era, Bartunek's had the best team in Cleveland. Class A.
Uh-huh.
They had a guy playing first base for him. I pitched against them, and I know Benny Vizan, he played for Buffalo in the International League first base. They had some real good ball players there. They had one kid that on their team that was I believe his dad was a big league ball player. Oh, God. Yeah. What was the Indians had a guy that was a great ball player, outfielder, in the era when Sammy Hale made the triple play or something, or that was Wamsby, I don't know. I can't remember everything. I'm going back a lot of years.
Yeah. Who was your favorite player on the Indians team when you were growing up?
Did you have them? In those days, I liked Hal Trotsky. I mean, I remember fellas like Orris Hockett. I remember some of these players. I mean, I followed them. There was Raleigh Hemsley. He was a catcher. I remember when Lou Boudreau and Ray Mack came up. Ray Mack was a local boy from Cleveland that played football, and that was his son that was with the Los Angeles Rams. That was
pretty
Mack's
good,
son.
Pretty good
Ray Mack,
player.
They brought Ray Mack and Lou Boudreau up from Buffalo in the International League to be the double play combination. They really brought up Boudreau as a throw-in. Ray Mack was the man they wanted. Mm-hmm. Ray Makowski was his real name. And Ray Mack went to Case Western Reserve. I think at that time it was called Case or Western Reserve. They were separate then. And Ray Mack was a good football player too, and he was a baseball player. He was a second baseman, and Boudreau was the shortstop. Well, Mack didn't hit too well when he came up, and Boudreau, of course, turned into a great ball player. I know Lou very well. Lou tried to sign me when the Indians when Bill Feck were there. I worked out a lot with them. The first major league ball club I ever worked out, Mr. Lindquist got me a tryout. Oh God, I must have been 16 years old. Back in, it had to be in 1946 or some 45. It was 45 because it was a war year. Mm-hmm. I remember Pete Gray was on the Browns,
right.
The one-armed fella.
Right.
And I worked out that day, and I was so skinny. They gave me a uniform to wear. It was Ella. It was Kinder. Ellis Kinder.
Uh-huh.
Was that his name?
I believe so.
Pitcher. And I had to wrap the belt around me twice. And it was big on me. And, of course, the clubhouse man at that time was Lefty Wiseman. And I know Freddie Wiseman, his son, that's a very big lawyer in Cleveland. And I know them. I know the family later. But Lefty was a rough guy. He just throw a uniform at you, did this and all that. You weren't nothing if you weren't a big league ball player.
Okay.
But it was a terrific experience. I went out and I worked out with him, but of course I was too young. I wasn't going to sign at that age.
Right.
But I worked out with him, and it was an experience. And then later on, when I went to working out with other, I worked out with the Indians. They wanted to sign me. The Yankees tried to sign me, a scout by the name of Johnny Haddock. He tried to sign me. I had offers from just about every major league team at that time.
Why did you pick Cincinnati?
Well, number one, you know what? It was funny. Warren Giles was very down to earth with me. He was nice. He talked to my family, and the one that really signed me was later on in the National League office. It was Fred Flagg. He was the head scout. And Fred Flagg came to my house and he talked to me, and they encouraged me to continue college, and that's why my folks liked them and all of that. And so I went down and I worked out in Crosley Field, and they were playing the Giants at that time, and I threw batting practice. I threw on the sideline. They had me throwing, and the kid that caught me was later. I played with him in minor leagues, and of course he played in the big leagues. He was a catcher. He hurt his arm. He played all over. He was a good hitter. He was from Cincinnati, and his name was Bob Niemann. Bob Niemann was a good major league ball player. Good hitter. He couldn't run. Couldn't throw. But he could hit. He played with me at Tulsa, too. And Bob, I saw Bob when I lived in California, just prior to him dying. He wrote a book. He was an intelligent individual. And Bob Niemann was my catcher. And I was warming up. And, of course, you know how the ball players were in those days. You see a young kid working out. The Giants, they were all over there looking. Johnny Mize was on that ball club. Johnny Mize, and I'll tell you who caught on that team. He was at the end of his career. The Schnoz, what's his name? Guy with the big nose that could... Lombardi. Lombardi. Not Vic Lombardi, that was a pitcher. What was Lombardi's first name? Anyway, Lombardi was a great ball player. This poor guy, they used to throw him out from right field. I mean, he couldn't run. And
he was a pretty good hitter.
Oh, he was a great hitter. I mean, this man would have hit, I don't know, 30, 40 points higher if he could run. Couldn't run, but anyways, they all came over and said, kid, you got good stuff. They like you. Make them pay. Make them pay. Because in those days, they didn't pay.
Did they give you a bonus for signing?
Yes, I got what was a big bonus in those days. I signed a major league contract.
Well, that was unusual.
Which was 55 or 6,500 at that time. That's what it was. That was the minimum. What's it today, about 260?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But anyway, they gave me $18,000. They split it up over 3 years for tax reasons way back then. But that was a lot of money, but it wasn't a lot of money. You look back today, the largest bonus player at that time, I believe, was Johnny Antonelli. He got $75,000 at that time. And, of course, I knew John. I played against John. They had a kid that was in the Pittsburgh organization that they signed that later, he didn't cut it as a pitcher. I'm trying to think what his name. He played at... New Orleans in the Southern League, and he got $100,000 later on. I'm trying to think what his name was, but he later became a first baseman. He wasn't a bad hitter, but there were a few around. I remember at that time when I signed, they signed a kid by the name of Jerry Blackburn for decent money, Cincinnati. He was from Kannapolis, North Carolina. Kid couldn't control his weight, and he didn't cut it at all. But there weren't that many bonus players in those days.
No,
there were very few. They were just starting to do that stuff. To get a major league contract was something in those days. And of course, I signed in June 29th. It should say here.
It doesn't say there.
June 29th of 1940. And I joined a ball club in Pittsburgh. We played their 4th of July at Forbes Field. And I was just happy to be in a uniform. It was a thrill. I was a young kid.
Yeah.
I was 19 years old at the time. And I stayed with them. And then after that 4th of July series, they sent me to Sunbury in the Interstate League. And then I went there. My manager was an old relief pitcher from the Yankees by the name of Joe Beggs. Joe Beggs, he was from outside of Youngstown. In Pennsylvania side, I forget the name of the city, but Joe was he had been a reliever with the Yankees, and I pitched the rest of the season there. I think I lost my first 3-4 games. I was leading every game, and I'd run out of gas. I didn't know about running and keeping in shape. We didn't know. We were just kids. We used to play 2-3 times a week, and that was it.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, he told me, he says, you have to run. You've got to get your legs in shape. If your legs are in shape, your arm will be in shape. You'll be able to go the full 9 innings or 7 innings, whichever they had. in those days they had a 9-inning games and they played 7-inning the second of a doubleheader.
Right.
Anyway, I wound up, I won 5 out of my next 6. I think I was 1-4 when I first started. And I wound up with a 6-4 record. And I pitched pretty good ball after that. And
did you get discouraged when you started?
No. I mean, I really didn't. I just, because I knew, I thought I had great stuff. I was more of a stuff pitcher in those days. I threw, they didn't gauge anything in those days. I probably threw in the 80s, but my ball was live. My ball moved all the time. If I threw a ball, it sunk, it slid. The ball was live. There's players like, you got Cologne today. Cologne throws 90-some miles an hour, but he's straight as a string.
Something, yeah.
Man, I saw a lot of ball players like that in my career. Saw a lot of players like that. I always found out that if your ball moved, you had a much better pitcher. And I had what I thought was my crackerjack pitch. Threw it straight overhand, dropped it off. I threw exactly like Warren Spahn. Used to kick my leg up. Of course, they cut all that out. They just do this. Larson was one of the first ones, incidentally, to start with that little short windup.
Oh.
They claim that you use too much energy. Now, I used to watch Bob Feller out there, and Bob Feller. Feller was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
He's a peculiar guy. I know Bob to this day. In fact, I got some pictures here of Bob Feller in Tucson not so long ago. I think the last year they were there. Bob was a great, great pitcher. And I remember when they signed him and he played for the Rosenblums, Class A ball.
Right.
He was wild, but he threw hard. In fact, it was funny that I should talk about this.
Go ahead.
Bob Feller pitched against in a spring training game against the Cardinals, the Gas House game. They were a great ball club. They were scared to death of him. He was so wild. But he struck out just about everybody. Back in Cleveland, they wrote it up too about it, but Pepper Martin remembered, he says, oh boy, could he throw.
Uh-huh.
Feller probably threw close to 100 miles an hour, right around there. And of course, a lot of people don't realize Bob Feller had one of the best curveballs in baseball. The man that I used to watch that I really liked, my aunt used to take me to ball games when they played in League Park.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the best curveball pitcher at that time was with Detroit. I'm trying to think what his name was. He was one of my idols. He had the best curveball. He was, I can't even think of it now.
Was it Niehaus?
No. This had to be back in the middle 40s.
Uh-huh.
He was a great right-hander.
They had some good players that Detroit team.
Yeah.
Good ball teams.
Oh, sure. Yes. But anyway, Feller had one of the best curveballs. Feller was in wonderful condition. If you ever looked in the dugout, he was doing chin-ups all the time. He was a real nut for being in condition.
He's still in pretty good condition, being 80-something.
Oh, yeah, and he can still throw. I can't throw like he can. And I'm a lot younger than him. I'm 72 now. And Feller's 80-something. I know he's in his 80s. He can still throw. When they had those fantasy camps, he used to go and he'd throw there.
Uh-huh.
And, see, my whole life is very closely related to Cleveland more than any other ball club, really, including Cincinnati. Although, when I played there, of course, I knew everybody, and I knew the National League at that time. I played against Tommy Lasorda. Tom and I are pretty good friends to this day. Tom was at Montreal when I was at Buffalo, and Tom was at the Dodgers when I was there. And Tom's a good guy. In fact, when they roasted him here in Las Vegas a few years ago, he was there, and he says, he was talking to some people there, and he said, "You see this here fat guy, this old guy? He would have got $1.5 million for signing in today's baseball."
You're probably right, being a left-hander.
And then he went on to tell him about the story I pitched against Montreal. Hobie Landreth was my catcher, who later caught with me at Cincinnati, and then he went to the Cubs. Hobie, they were picking up his signs. Lasorda used to coach when he didn't pitch, and he could see the signs, and he was flashing the pitches to the player, and I threw a two-hit shutout against him. I says, "Well, that's why. They were looking for more than they got." But I had the good curveball. I loved to watch Spawn, and I used to throw it just like straight overhand and brought it down. Because when we were kids, they called it a drop, but it was just strictly a straight overhand curveball. Today, most of these fellas in the big leagues I watch them, most of them throw three-quarter. They throw from out here, and some throw sidearm. Sidearm curveball is of no advantage. People don't realize that ball's going on one plane.
Uh-huh.
The whole idea of a curveball, that's why the overhand curveball is the greatest one, because it's dropping straight down. You have to catch it right at the level when the ball is there. But anyway, that was it. I didn't throw a changeup at that time. Later on, I worked on a changeup. They were just coming with the slider then. After my career was almost over, I started to fool with a slider.
Uh-huh.
In fact, in spring training, we had something. My son was telling me he's pretty active down in Atlanta in the baseball down there, and there was a ex-major league ball player that he was doing. I told him about what they did to teach these kids how to throw a slider without hurting their arm. We had a ball in spring training. They would pound it oblong like a football almost and put a dot on each end of the nose of the football, the ball. And they teach you to throw it just like you would stiff wrist.
Uh-huh.
And you just throw it from three quarters out here, and you're throwing it like a football, just how you throw a football. You pass when you're right. Passing a football. And if you see the two dot, if you see the dot coming at you, you're throwing it properly.
Oh, okay.
The ball comes in like a fastball, looks just like a fastball, and just moves just like 6-8 inches. That's uh-huh. all it is. And that's what a slider is. They want the hitter to look at it. Looks like a fastball. He swings to hit it on the fat part, and it either hits him in the hands if he's it depends if the guy's left-hander or right-hander, and inside, or it goes away from him. So when a right-handed hitter against a right-handed pitcher, that ball comes, he goes to swing, he thinks he's going to hit it on the sweet part of the bat, and it moves that little bit, he hits it on the end of the bat. Left-hander into him, hits him on the fist. So that's the idea of a slider. Of course, they throw different type of sliders, but that slider was the easiest on your arm.
Uh-huh.
You're not hurting your arm.
What pitch hurts your arm the most?
Well,
would it be the slider?
Later on in my career, they got me to throw a screwball.
Oh.
And I started with that. Now you're throwing a fastball, you're throwing a curveball, you're throwing a screwball, you're going the opposite way. So the joint, that's how I got my bone chips.
Right.
I started throwing that screwball. It was a good pitch. My ball naturally went away and sunk. It was a sinker. But by turning it over, see, Carl Hubble, that's why Carl Hubble walked down the street. You could see the palm of his hand. His arm was so distorted from throwing the screwball. Well, if you throw enough screwballs, it is more natural for you to throw that than it is to throw that. I start losing my good curveball.
Uh-huh.
because of that. Because you're doing both ways, I started to lose the excellent curveball that I had. And but once you start doing that, it's bad. And I started getting the chips. I got a bone chip at Buffalo in 1951, just before I went in service. And I had a good year at Buffalo. I had one of the top earned run averages, if it should be in here. 292 earned
right.
run average.
Right.
I have the book from that year. My son probably has it. The leading pitcher in the International League that year in earned run average was the right-hander that went up with the Cardinals. I'm trying to think what his name was. But I was right behind him on earned run average there. In Buffalo, if you've ever been at ballpark, it was a small Offerman Stadium, terrible small stadium. You could spit over the fence. Right field, the deepest part of the ballpark was 345 in left center, had a fairly high fence there.
Uh-huh.
And right field was 2-something.
Wow.
Under 300, right around 300. It was a short ballpark. And a tough ballpark, and I had a pretty good earned run average in that league. I had 11-11, that's right, in that year. But we didn't have a real good ball club. But we had some nice players on the team. And we weren't one of the top ball clubs. But for considering what we had there, they put U.S. Navy. That's U.S. Army. I see it now. Okay, and my manager there was George Specs Taporcer. He went blind during the season. Lost his sight.
Oh.
Specs Taporcer was an ex-major leaguer. He was an older guy. Nice man. And then one of the coaches took over. He was a pinch hitter too. Coker Triplett, who didn't play much major league ball. He played mostly in the minors. But he was a nice guy. And we finished out the year there. I was on loan to Buffalo. That was not a Cincinnati farm club at that time. I don't think we had a AAA ball club at that time.
Really?
Yeah. And so I was on loan, really, to them. And Hobie Landreth was my catcher, and he was on loan. And who else was? We had a fella in the outfield who was a pretty good hitter that couldn't run either. Frank Carswell. He played with Detroit later. He was a good hitter. He was from Texas somewhere. There was another one of our players there. We had Wally Post.
Oh, okay.
Wally Post, when I first met Wally, Wally was a pitcher, pretty good pitcher.
Uh-huh.
But he was a good hitter. And they made him into, that was the first year he played center field over there in Buffalo. And from there he went up to Cincinnati. Wally was a good athlete. He died young also. His wife comes to town here sometimes. His grandson, you know who his grandson is?
No, I don't.
He's the kid that was the quarterback for Ohio State a few years ago that plays pro ball now. That's his grandson. Wait, I'll tell you his name in a minute. He was with Philadelphia with the Eagles. They were terrible. He didn't do very well. Played for Ohio State. He was the quarterback for, oh, God, what's his name? He's still playing now. He's with the...
Start with a T?
No.
No?
He's with, I think he's with the Oakland Raiders now.
Graham?
No. No, Graham's from Ohio State, too.
Right, yeah.
It'll come to me. My mind is, one thing I have for my age, my mind is still real good. A lot of people, I see a lot of fellas, their minds are terrible. Can't remember anything, can't remember what they had for breakfast. But anyway, That was Wally's grandson, but we had a decent ball club. But we were young and we were just coming around. A guy by the name of Stringfellow came from Boston. He was the shortstop, Al Stringer. He had another brother who was an outfielder. These names come back to me periodically, but it's amazing to be able to remember all of these things. But anyway, after you probably want to get back to my career as to coming up with back in when I was at Columbia, when I almost pitched the 2 no-hitters in a row, that would have been something as charisma for me, because here I roomed with the guy that threw the only 2 no-hitters in a row in the big leagues.
When I
roomed with Vandermeer. In fact, he told his wife, "This kid is going to take my place." Well, yeah, thanks for the compliment, but I wasn't that good. But Vandermeer was a nice guy. I guess he just died recently, in the last year or
so. Yeah.
John was a nice man. Uh-huh. Nice man. And when I threw all these shutouts, I was thinking of him. The funniest part, the one hitter I threw, the one hit was made by a fellow that we had on the Columbia team. We traded him to the Florida team. They got Jacksonville. Jacksonville was in the Sally League then. And he got the only hit. His name was Dean Wood. He couldn't run that good. I had played with him. He was a shortstop. He laid a bunt down, and it was the second game of a doubleheader, and it had rained. It was wet. I ran over, I got the ball, and I knew he couldn't run. I went to throw it, and I didn't have a good grip, and my foot slipped, and I threw it. I hopped it to first base, and it was bang, bang, he was safe. Oh. That was the only hit they got. Otherwise, I'd had 2 no-hitters in a row. And Jack Harshman was on that ball club, too, before he came up as a pitcher with the White Sox. You know who else was on that ball club, if I'm not mistaken? He hit a lot of home runs. This guy was strong. I wish I wouldn't have gave my kids all this stuff. I look it up myself. I can't remember everything.
Right.
They had, the guy that is the rifleman.
Chuck Connors.
Connors played there.
Oh.
I played against Chuck Connors.
Uh-huh.
And
was he a pretty good hitter?
Oh yeah, he got.
He was a big guy, wasn't he?
He had big power. Yeah. Good power. You know what was one of the great thrills of me too? When I was a kid growing up, Pat Seary was with Cleveland. Do you remember Pat
Seary?
Right,
yeah, I remember the name.
Short, fat Pat Seary. He hit a lot of home runs. He was strong, but he must have been a warrior ball player.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think so. Anyways, one year we were coming from spring training with the Reds, and we played an exhibition game in Memphis, and he was with Memphis, with the Memphis Chicks, and we played an exhibition game, Cincinnati, and I pitched against him that day, and I knew he was a rank low ball hitter or a rank high ball hitter. I wasn't sure. Anyway, whatever it was, I think he was a high ball hitter. I threw the first time when he hit the ball over the 385 mark. I mean, he shot it out of there. Uh-huh. After that, he struck out 3 times because I threw him nothing but low stuff. But that's the kind of a ball player he was. But I never forgot, because here I remember, you know, he was one of my idols too, because he played with the Indians. And this is what you remember.
Yeah. When you made the major league team, what kind of feelings did you have? Were you scared or anxious?
I was anxious. I was proud. I felt great. I felt it was an accomplishment, and it was in those days. There were 16 major league teams in the world. There was 25 ball players on each roster. That's 400 major leaguers in the whole world. One out of 400, it's an accomplishment. And that's the way I felt. And of course, I wanted to be a real great ball player. I wanted to be. I thought I had the stuff to do it too. Had I not hurt my arm, I really did have good stuff. I think I could have had a nice career. I did a couple of foolish things. I should have never had that operation in the Army.
What type of operation was
it? Bone chips.
Bone chips.
When I was at Buffalo, I pitched a ball game, and I stayed in there, and I fought it. I wanted to win the game, and I did. I was a pretty clean liver in those days. I mean, I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, and I drank a little beer. They made me to drink beer my first year because I was so thin. I weighed 150 pounds when I went out, and after 4 to 6 weeks, I was down to 140 pounds. I mean, I couldn't gain any weight in those days. So they got me to drinking beer. By the end of that season, I weighed 165. I was okay. So I drank beer really as a matter of trying. I hated it. It had a horrible taste. But I had gained weight, and I got up there. I pitched most of my career at 175, 180. I stayed right in there, which was a good weight. And I really felt that I was going to be something really good. I had some great ball games at Buffalo and but this game against Syracuse I was pitching. In fact, what was the first baseman that played for the Indians and he played for the Yankees? Black fella, black ball player. He was good hitter, good ball player. He played for Syracuse then.
It wasn't Luke Easter.
No, Luke I played
Power?
With. Vic Power.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you're very good.
Thank you.
Vic Power was on that team. And I had a ball game. I was really struggling because normally I go to bed the night before and all that. I was out with some gal, and I met her the next day, and I fooled around. I had a little sex the day I pitched. I never did that. Never, ever. I ran out of gas. I was tired. And Coker Triplett wouldn't take me out of the game. I mean, he knew about what happened. I won the game. I slugged it out and won it. I almost blew it, but I was really out of gas. And I threw, and I felt a twinge in my arm. That's when I chipped my elbow.
Was that the first time you had hurt your arm?
Yeah, I had never, ever, except that year that I pitched in that 28 degrees weather, my arm was dead, but my arm came back real good the next year. My arm was good. I just had arrested. It was dead. My arm was dead. And I've had other ball players tell me they've done the same thing. Your arm just goes dead. You have to rest it. That's all you can do. Anyway, I never had any arm trouble or anything till then. And then it was hurting me bad, and I went Cincinnati sent me to the doctor, and they x-rayed me, and I had a bone chip in there. And they said, but it's okay, it's in the fatty tissue, it's not going to bother you. It was near the end of the year. Then I went in the Army after that season. And I played, and I pitched with it, and I would feel it, I would moved it out of there, it would get in the joint, you had to move it out or it'd lock you in. And I had it operated by an Army doctor. Worst thing I ever, ever did. He destroyed me. He went in, instead of going around the tendon, pull the tendon to the side, go around into the fatty tissue and cut it out, he split the tendon.
Oh.
Pinched it from both sides and split the tendon and took it out. Destroyed me. He really did. And I played after that. I pitched in the service, and I played first base, and I played the outfield. I played a lot with it, and when it wasn't hurting me, I could pitch. I was okay. But as soon as it would get... So then I came back to Cincinnati afterwards, and I did a dumb thing. I didn't call... Gabe Paul was the general manager then. I was friendly with. Gabe was at my wedding. And everything. I mean, I was friendly with Gabe. I never told him that I had this surgery in the Army. I don't know why I want to keep a secret. He would have told me, don't you dare get it. I know what would have happened. But I wanted to play.
Right.
I wanted to play. I played basketball and baseball there. And I didn't want to kill 2 years for nothing.
Right.
In the service. It was during the Korean War.
Uh-huh.
I was fortunate I didn't go to Korea. I was supposed to. I fell in the locker room in the shower, and I had a concussion, and I had a problem from that. I had a head injury, and I was okay, but they didn't discharge me. Probably should have, but they didn't. Anyways, I came back to Cincinnati, and my arm was rested and everything. I came to spring, and I had a good spring, and I stayed with the ball club. The other two guys that came up with me from Buffalo, Rudy Manarson and Tom Acker. Tom Acker, big right-hander, throw hard. He relieved for Cincinnati for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Manarson, he pitched 1 or 2 years at Cincinnati. Anyways, they came up. They didn't make the ball club. They went back to the minors. And it's funny. The three of us came up from Buffalo. We were going to be pretty much a mainstay, a part of their staff. Nuxall, who's my good friend, Joe had gone back to the minors. Joe was at, in 1951 when we were at Buffalo, Joe was at Tulsa in the Texas League.
Uh-huh.
He won 10 and lost 22. Lost 22 games. And when we went in the service, all three of us, he came up and he made it. And he made it with a lot of ball clubs. Joe was... Good guy. I'm glad that he made it, because he was really a good guy, and he was good for baseball. He is sports memorabilia, only 15-year-old ever.
Yeah.
And it'll never be again, because they won't let it happen.
There were a lot of young players on that 54 Reds team. I think I counted, two of the top pitchers were...
Corky Valentine?
Valentine, that was his first year.
Yep.
Art Fowler. That was his first year.
I played with both of them. And Art was my roommate. Art was, he later on, he everywhere that Billy Martin went, he was a coach with him.
Oh.
I don't know if you know that.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Art was very close with Art, I think, I don't know if he's still living. He was when I saw him with Oakland. When I was living in Chicago,
uh-huh.
I saw him with we went out, we had a good time. Art was a real fun-loving guy. Well, there was a guy that used to dissipate. He had a good knuckleball. He came up from Cincinnati. We got him from the Southern League. He played with Atlanta. He was on a team with Eddie Matthews.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you what kind of character he was. Eddie Matthews goes to put his shoes on. He had nailed them down, his spikes, nailed them to the floor. I knew Eddie Matthews, too. Nice. What a ball player.
Yeah.
Great wrist hitter. He just passed away this year.
Yeah, he did.
There were some real characters. We did have some young ball players. Was Art that young then?
Yeah, that was his rookie year.
Yeah, that was his rookie year.
Right, yeah. And I think he was
I'll tell you who we had on that team. We had Harry Perkowski. I think he just passed. He's very sick. I know that. He was a left-hander. We had Kenny Raffensperger. He's dead.
Uh-huh.
Kenny Raffensperger has been in the big leagues a long time. He was a pretty good pitcher. We had Frank Smith was a reliever. We had a kid by the name of Jackie Collum. He was a little left-hander. We had some left-handers on our team.
Yeah.
And, of course, Nuxall was there. Corky Valentine was my roommate. I didn't get along with him. Not too nice a guy. He just retired. He lives in Atlanta. What's his name was on that team? Jim Greengrass. He just retired from the sheriff's department in Atlanta. My kids live in Atlanta. I talk to him when I get
okay.
down there. I'm going down there in a couple of weeks, too.
Are you?
Yeah. And who
was the pitching coach on that team?
Phil Page. He's gone.
Yeah.
He was a left-handed pitcher himself.
Uh-huh. Did he play major league ball?
Yes, he did. He played for the Giants, I think.
Okay.
Phil Page. And the our manager was Bertie Tebbets.
Right.
Bertie knew baseball. I like Bertie. Bertie, he just passed away recently, too. Bertie was a nice man.
Uh-huh.
You know, he played for the Indians, too.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was the one that played on Detroit when they dropped a basket of tomatoes on his head in Cleveland Stadium. I remember all these things about him.
Uh-huh.
But Bertie was a nice, you know how he got the name Bertie?
No,
he had
I don't.
A high-pitched voice.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
well, I should have realized that. I've heard him on the radio. I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, listening to the Indians.
But Bertie, you know, Bertie was quite a guy. You know, he's the one that put the Williams shift.
Yeah, in fact, I had a question about that.
Yeah, Bertie's the one that did it.
Well, not the Williams shift.
Musial. On Musial.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the counterpart, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do you know the funniest part? Both those guys could hit the left field if they wanted to.
Uh-huh.
Oh, especially Williams.
Oh.
Williams, the greatest hitter I ever saw. They can say all they want about DiMaggio. He's a great ball player. I think Williams was the best.
Uh-huh.
He used to sit there. We used to all sit and listen to him talk hitting.
Uh-huh.
He had such fine eyesight, and it's very sad that he has to be going blind like he is now. The man could see the seams of the ball. He used to tell us. He could tell when it's a curve, he see the seams of the ball. He absolutely great hitter. When I was in high school or junior high, I got one of those, if you had good grades, you got a free ticket to the Indians game when they're playing at League Park yet.
Uh-huh.
And I saw him. He was a young ball player then, left-handed hitter. He hit one in right center field. League Park was just like, it was identical to Ebbets Field. They were identical fields. Right center where the fence was real high. The ball was rising as it went over the 375 marker there. I mean, it was well laced. I could never forget how this guy hit. He hit so hard. I mean, he was terrific. I loved to watch him. He was marvelous.
Did you ever get to pitch against him?
Exhibition game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't even remember what I did or what.
Uh-huh.
Down in Sarasota,
uh-huh.
We played them. I think I was in for an inning or two, and I don't even remember. I remember pitching against Musial.
Uh-huh.
I got Musial out, but that to me is an accomplishment. He was a great hitter, too. That's one of the better hitters in the National League.
I was going to ask you about the shift that Bertie pulled. Did you know that he was going to do that? I mean, did the other players on the team...
The shift?
Yeah.